And we're going to be thinking about that. However, the realms of the remarkable. Here's an example of something that remarkable that happened to me the other day. I posted a letter, not remarkable really, is it? And I took great care in making sure that everything was there in the envelope. It was a really important letter. And I thought, well, on my way down to shore, I'll pop it in the little post box on the roadside. And I did. And as soon as I dropped it into the letterbox, guess what I realised? No stamp. No stamp. So I spent the rest of my walk down to shore thinking, now, what can I do? How can I make sure that letter gets there? Because it may not. Or there might be a fine to pay on it, which I don't want to happen. So I was turning all this in my mind, and the post van drove up, turned the corner, stopped. The postie was ready to deliver some parcels across the road. So I went to him and I said, I know this sounds really pathetic, but I don't know what to do. I've put a letter in the box up at Buckstones at the turning circle, and I didn't put a stamp on it. He said, well, just leave it with me. It'll probably still be in the box, because I thought, well, if I go to the box at collection time, I can actually be there when he empties the box. But he said, well, the box is emptied not according to those schedules. It'll probably be in the box all day. So I went on my way, but he'd given me some encouragement. And I came back home, walked back home, and guess what was there waiting for me? The unstamped envelope. This kind postman had gone to the box, opened it, took the letter out. He recognised it because there was no stamp on it. And he said, where do you live? I said, Six Parklands. Oh, I know. I've delivered there many times. And he brought it home. So I put a stamp on it and then put it in the box again, knowing that it will get to where it's going. Now, that's, I think, quite remarkable. And, yeah, we hear so many complaints about the post office. That is an encouragement. Anyway, there's another realm of the remarkable I want us to refer to. How many of you remember that TV miniseries, Jesus of Nazareth? 1977, Robert Powell played the part of Christ. Some of us do. And there is a little scene. I know there's dramatic license, but it's a really powerful scene in that film. After the resurrection, where the late Ian Holm, famous actor, who played the part of Zerah, a Sadducee, in the story, in the film, Sadducees did not accept, believe in resurrection. They did not. And there's a lovely scene, very powerful in my opinion, where he comes to the tomb, he looks in, he peers inside, he recognises that Jesus' body is gone, and he understands the significance of this, and he says to himself, now it all begins. I think that's fantastic. Now it all begins. And he was right. And that's where we are this morning. Thanks, John, for the first screen. That's where we are. We're going to be exploring what we can learn from the first Christians. So let's remind ourselves about the brief glimpses we've had from two portions in Acts. Jack is going to read the portions again. And before she does that, could we just have the next screen, John, please? Try and remember these questions, because I'm going to invite you, after we've heard the readings again, just to share your responses with someone nearby next to you about these two aspects of the life of the early church. So try and imagine you are part of a group of early believers. What is it like to be with them? And secondly, all the believers we read in these portions were one in heart and mind, and great grace was upon them all. How did they show that? How did they show that? If you'd like to follow the passage in the Bible, although it's going to be on screen in a moment, page 1094 and 1096, if you'd like to reach for a Bible there in a chair nearby. 1094, 1096, Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, the very end of each chapter. Acts 2, verse 42 to 47, and Acts 4, 32 to 36. Thank you, Jackie.
They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favour of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And chapter 4. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of his possessions was his own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and much grace was upon them all. There were no needy persons among them. For from time to time, those who owned lands or houses sold them, bought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone as he had need. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means sons of encouragement, sold a field he owned and bought the money and put it at the apostles' feet.
Thank you, Jackie. John, could we have those two questions back on screen? I think that would be probably helpful, even though we have Bibles open. And the next one it is. That's it. Thank you. Would you like to think on those two questions and just share your thoughts with someone sitting next to you or nearby as we get a glimpse of what life was like in the early church? Thank you. Over to you for a few minutes.
Anya Taylor-Joy, Mayor for Hollowell's in Kitchen Landing and the Queen's Family, was born in 1996. Other celebrities sharing his birthday, Helen Hudson, Adam Scott, and Sarah Bruce.
Remember that some of these believers would have met the risen Jesus. Others were relying on the apostles' teaching. And we're told in the previous portion of one of those readings that over 3,000 new believers were added to the number of the church in that very short space of time. So this is a church walking in the Spirit. And the believers continue to use the temple as a meeting place, a place of assembly and a place of ministry. But they also met in each other's homes. The new converts needed instruction, needed teaching, needed help in understanding everything that had happened and what this new church was going to be as they grew and became effective witnesses and disciples for Jesus. Two phrases in Acts 2:42 need explanation. The breaking of bread probably refers to their regular meals, but at the close of each meal they probably pause to remember Jesus and observe what we call the Lord's Supper. Bread and wine were common fare at a Jewish table. The word fellowship, which we come across in these verses, is much more than being together. It means having in common, and probably refers to the sharing of material goods that was practiced by the early church. The church had a powerful testimony among the unsaved Jews, not only because of the miracles and wonders done by the apostles and their fervent prayer, but also because of the way the members of the fellowship loved each other and served the Lord. There's a very famous portion in John Wesley's diary. I can't remember which part of the country he's travelling in at this particular moment. It's certainly not Huddersfield or Halifax, because he wanted the good Lord to preserve him from those places. But he writes, "See how these Christians love each other. See how these Christians love each other." And the risen Lord continued to work with the early church, and people continued to be saved. The Christians we meet in Acts are not content to meet once a week for services as usual. They met daily, cared daily, won souls daily, read the scriptures daily, and increased in number daily. Their Christian faith and devotion was a day-to-day reality, not a once-a-week routine. Why? Because the risen Christ was a living reality to them, and his resurrection power was at work in their lives through the Spirit. And if we now have the next slide, John, I think these verses give us three characteristics of the early church. One is that the church was unified, held together by the Spirit of God, a spiritual unity. The people were united in their beliefs as well as in fellowship, giving, worship, and witness. Secondly, the church was magnified. The numbers of believers grew rapidly. The church multiplied. Each member sought to be an effective evangelist and witness for Lord Jesus. No wonder the church grew from tens to thousands in a short time. One evidence of the unity of the church was the way they sacrificed and shared with each other. They regarded giving as a blessing, not a burden. This loving generosity is worthy of our attention. And at the end of that second reading, we we're introduced to Barnabas, or Joseph, who was nicknamed Barnabas, son of encouragement. That's what his name means. What a fabulous meaning. Son of encouragement. There's much we don't know about Barnabas, but what we do know, he's mentioned at least 25 times in the Acts of the Apostles, another 5 times in the Epistles. And he had the most important ministry in the church, to be an encourager. This we do know about him. He was a spirit-filled Christian who was an encouragement to the church because he gave all to Jesus and supported the believers. Now, as we close, let's understand, not every one of us can be like Peter or Paul or John, but we can all be like Barnabas and have a ministry of encouragement. So what can we learn from the first Christians? Let's just close with a silent moment and think about what it is the Spirit is trying to teach us from the example of the early church and how we might put that into practice in our own lives, individually and collectively at St. Thomas. So let's be quiet for a moment and think about these things. Lord, in your mercy, hear our prayer.